Hey everybody, welcome into Crossing Broadcast on a Thursday afternoon. Kevin here with you. Russ will be here whenever he decides to show up. It's been about 12:30 the last couple weeks. I think he will be back with us at 12:30. I'm in a great mood because I got off the damn crutches finally. I can walk like a regular human being again. So that combined with the 70-degree weather outside will do wonders in the mental health department. Philadelphia Flyers, not so much for the mental health, although the Sixers are playing well. We're going to talk about both of those teams. We will get it back to the Eagles in the show. We will talk about two draft strategies that I have outlined that I will be happy with if Howie Roseman decides to traverse either one of those avenues. We have the Phillies, of course, scraped back to 500 after a series win against the Cardinals, and we have some City Connect uniforms that everybody except me seems to hate. I think I'm the only person on the planet that likes these uniforms, so we will talk about that as well. We'll get into a couple of other things. Maybe we'll talk about the Media Nuggets column I did the other day, talk about the Aramark strike a little bit. Russ will be here in a little bit, as I said, but for now, co-hosting today's show with me, making his Crossing broadcast debut, I'm going to bring on my guy Corey Ferlin from the Keystone State Ultras as he drops off the panel right before I'm going to bring him on. So we will get him back on. Never mind. Let's bring on today's guest instead. Let's bring on the Philly captain. Where's the captain? Let's bring captain on. There he is.
Here I am. What's captain up? Always knows how to sail the ship. I never abandon a podcast once I'm in the waiting room.
Now, we're not going to have any Wi-Fi issues today, are we? I feel like the one time that we had you on, I lost you three times, and then we got you back at the very last minute.
I mean, I've been here. I've been on hold for 5 minutes, jamming out to the hold music of Crossing Broad, waiting in my queue pretty good. Everything's working well. I moved my studio from my basement into my living room, which is the same room that has the router. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed it works, but I live in a house. I live in a row home with 27 people. So, you know, shit happens.
Well, okay, I got Corey back. Now, Corey was supposed to be my backup for if your Wi-Fi went to shit. And ironically, you made it onto the show before he did. But welcome, brother. How are you, man? What's going on?
I'm good, buddy. Listen, it's not a matter of my Wi-Fi going to shit. It's the matter of I'm helping you out while I'm working here, doing my damn thing, and I got kind of hosed. So I just was like sitting here and just blame me. It's always Corey's fault. I get it. It's no big deal.
It's all good. Corey from the Keystone State Ultras, a founding member of the Sons of Ben, a guy that I've known for 14, 15 years now, something like that. You're a Philly sports degenerate like me and Cap. So I feel like you'll just slide right.
Oh, yeah, dude. I grew up, you know, as a little kid, like old man. We didn't have the Union when I was a little kid. Right. And old man, my dad was like, listen, it's the Phillies. It's the Birds. It's the Sixers. It's the Flyers. It's Villanova basketball. That's just me because I'm, you know, a suburban kid. And yeah. And then obviously the Union became like my thing probably about 15 years ago. But listen, I'm a Philly sports degenerate 100%.
You'll fit in, man. We got one person representing Northeast Philly. We have one person representing Delco right now. And we have a Boyertown alumnus on the show.
I object to Northeast Philly. I live in Bridesburg. We are the River Wards. We are not Northeast Philadelphia.
Jeez. I forgot. Yeah.
I was a judge at a wing eating contest. It was in Northeast Philadelphia. And the Bridesburg pub was part of it. And I wanted to disqualify them because they're not from the hood. So,
So
Bridesburg's, I'm not part of Northeast. I don't want to associate with those people.
Okay. Didn't we make you on the last podcast when Pagan was still hosting? Didn't we make you like the official Northeast Philadelphia correspondent?
I mean, it's always good to get airtime. I'm not going to argue with you, but I just went along with it. Can I ask you about that? What's going on with you and Kyle? Like, he's still part of Crossing Broad. I feel like I'm doing radio news right now. News.
You did a little thing with the Gambler guys the other day, and now you think you're a radio host. You're asking me the questions.
I'm curious because, like, no, this, I actually care about the local media, and the only two guys I really care about are you and Kyle, honestly.
No, it's all good. You know, Kyle's doing his thing. He's still doing the videos and everything. I just, you know, we relaunched this show like almost 2 years ago, and you know, booking guests and coming up with the rundown and doing the show twice a week or whatever. He just had like a lot of different things that he was doing, video and blog posts and whatever, that were pulling him in a bunch of different directions. So he was like, I'm just going to, you know, step back from the show for a little bit.
But you guys are still good. He's still part of Crossing
Broad. No, I didn't like fire him or anything. Like, no, he was not disciplined. You know, we've made a joke about him hanging his wall art, and that's why he's gone. But no, he just wanted to step back from the show for a little bit because he just got other shit he's been working on. He's been doing a lot of videos. He's got a podcast that he launched. He's doing another podcast where they're doing like Man on the Street, where they're all kind of sitting there at a table in random spots and they're doing that thing. So I'm basically running the show. Rush jumps on whenever he feels like jumping on. And then, you know, I grab a bunch of random people and we keep doing it that way. So, no, it's all good, though. There's nothing. We're all good. Site traffic's good. People are listening to the show.
Right. Kyle was out there. I saw him at WrestleMania weekend. He was out there every day doing something dumb. Yelling at people that, you know, trying to get the Philly people a bad reputation like he does. So he was out there every day doing that. And, he's out there hustling. It's good. All right. So I was worried.
You got nothing to worry about. No, it's funny, too.
I don't want mom and dad to break up. I love the family so much.
No, we did not have any kind of falling out or anything like that. It's not a Noel Gallagher and Liam Gallagher Oasis situation or anything like that. We're still cool. No issues. I do think it's funny, too, because whenever he goes and does a video, I see you in the background, or whenever you do a video, you inevitably bump into him. So that's like a recurring theme. I do want to get into the WrestleMania thing because I know you're all over it down there. But first, I was not expecting to talk about this on the show today, but we do have breaking news, boys. We have O.J. Simpson is no longer with us. Orenthal James Simpson passed. Corey, you look like you're hearing this for the first time. Did you not see this, that he died about an hour ago? Or I don't know if he died an hour ago, but that's when the announcement went out.
Bro, no, that's news to me. I was literally like, I've been inundated at work all day. So like, I didn't even get a chance. So this is like, you just broke it to me. So you just saw my actual reaction to hearing that the juice is no longer loose. Dude.
Yeah, that's the juice is no longer loose. He's, this was the tweet that came out from his official Twitter account on April 10th. Our father, Orenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and his grandchildren during his time of transition. The family asks that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace. Now, Captain, here's the thing, man. We're not like great obituary writers at Crossing Broad. It's not like really in our wheelhouse. We try to do a couple nice paragraphs and then like say rest in peace and whatever. I'm not sure. And it's not really the time for joking or whatever, you know. But when I opened the page to start writing this one, I was like, oh, shit. You know, what do I do with OJ here? Because like very infamous, complicated individual. How much do I talk about the murder trial? How much do I talk about him playing football? It was just very like kind of strange. So I was very conservative with that one. And I was like, here's what he did in football. Here's what he did in acting. He was a Naked Gun and whatever. And then, he was on trial for murder. And he also went to jail for 9 years for armed robbery as well. But dude, man, I just remember like, so the three of us are all old enough to remember like the trial, and we were alive during it. And like, so you guys know, like this was the craziest shit, the biggest thing that was happening like on the planet at the time. And it's one of those things where it's like, I remember exactly where I was and exactly what was going on when they were having him try on the glove and all that. And so I was like 10 years old, and it was like the summer of 1995. And like we were out of school for the summer, you know, my friend's mom would take us to the Boyertown pool in her van, and we get out and we go in or whatever. And she's carrying like an old school radio, like a boom, like a battery powered radio. It was before smartphones or whatever. We went for like five straight days. We would run around, be jumping in and out of the pool. She would sit there with the radio on the side of her like beach chair, listening to the OJ Simpson trial on the radio. And like, she was not the only one. There was like 15 middle-aged white women who were all doing the same thing at the Boyertown, but it was like, it was everything, man. It was like the biggest thing ever. And I don't remember, like, quite honestly, man, I can't remember anything bigger than that since it happened. Am I wrong to think that, Cap? I mean, that was like the biggest thing on the planet.
I remember, like, I lived in Port Richmond as a kid, and I remember we would like go into our friends' houses in between baseball games to get a glass of iced tea. No matter what house you went into, the person in that house, mom, dad, no matter who it was, they were watching the OJ trial. If they weren't watching the OJ trial, they were watching the newly formed Court TV. Court TV became a thing because of the OJ trial.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember the day of the OJ chase, people were like sitting on their steps. They had TVs out. Like it was like a party.
Dude, what a crazy. Do you talk about the chase? That's immediately where my head went. When you said, as soon as he talked about that, I remember.
Like Bronco, man.
Yeah. Yo, bro, I was in sixth grade. I was at a pool party in Lansdale trying to mack and get my first kiss from a girl while this was going on. And I just remember watching the OJ case trying to put the little smooth, like, hey, come here. We're watching OJ in a white Bronco, dude. It wasn't at a Dairy Queen, but it was at a pool in the Lansdale area.
Dude, it just like, yeah, I just remember it being like, everywhere, man. All those like little cultural pieces, like the glove and the Johnny Cochran jokes on Seinfeld and the chase and all of this stuff. And then OJ is saying that he was going to find the killer after he was acquitted. Like the whole thing just like,
yeah, okay.
He spent many years looking for him on golf courses.
On golf courses, yeah. So this is funny, Craig, if you have that, pull this up. I did not know this, so I can't take credit for this, but somebody on the Crossing Broad page noted that OJ Simpson should have been a Philadelphia Eagle. So OJ was the number one draft pick in 1969. The Eagles picked third that year. And the reason is because this 1968 Eagles, Craig, if you want to scroll down to the wins and losses there, the Eagles were like 0-10 at some point, or like 0-9 here or whatever. Yeah, there we go. So they were 0-11. This was 1968. I remember it like it was yesterday.
This is the Santa Claus snowball year.
What was it really?
Yeah, it really was.
Oh yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, yeah. So they went 2-12, but they were 0-11 at one point. And so they would have had the number one draft pick and they would have drafted OJ because he was like, I do remember he like people saying he was a consensus number one back at that time. But if they had not won these meaningless games, 12-0 against the Detroit Lions and 29-17 against the New Orleans Saints, then yeah, OJ would have been an Eagle. And I mean, can you imagine that shit? Like as big as it was nationally, that would have been even bigger here if he was.
I say if he gets drafted by the Eagles, he's not a murderer. Probably all those Buffalo winters drove him mad, and he just gets mad easily now because of him playing in Buffalo. If he would have been drafted by the Eagles, we don't have a murder trial.
Oh, dude, it's just I got to like four paragraphs of that story and I'm like, all right, I think I've written enough here. Let's just press publish and we'll call it a day for that one.
Think about his kids. All right. Yeah. So now his kids, like their dad died, their mom's dead, and now the entire world is gonna be shitting on your father as he died. Like they have not experienced a normal family member's death ever.
And that is tough, man. Dude, that is so tough. And like, I don't, you know, it's funny because, you know, when OJ got out of jail, when he did the armed robbery thing, and that was like 2017 or whatever, you know, if you're like a kid in your 20s, I mean, do you know OJ for anything more than like his goofy, like Twitter persona and the golf cart tweets? And, you know, like objectively, he was pretty funny and he was pretty interesting on social media. And like, if you're a like 24-year-old kid, you weren't alive during the murder trial and you don't remember the armed robbery thing. I mean, your perception of OJ is one thing. Or if you're older, if you're like in your 70s or your 80s, you remember him as being like the best friggin' football player.
Now the Hurts and Naked Gun.
Yeah.
That cheesy actor error.
Yeah. But it was such a complicated thing, man. There's so many errors. It's like, well, where the hell do I go? I'm a blogger, right? I'm not going to write like an obituary that matches everything that has to be said here.
Yeah, he brutally murdered two people.
Like, right.
He brutally murdered two people. He's a scumbag, right? That's it. That's all you can say. And he was a good athlete who killed people. And now I got to worry about how his kids feel about me talking about him being a scumbag on a podcast. That's his fault. Fuck him.
that's a good transitional moment right there. So we'll take that opportunity to move it on to something a little less serious, but that did very well this weekend. Cap, you were everywhere, man, for WrestleMania. I mean, like, so there's multiple nights, multiple things going on. I see you at Blue Meanie's wedding, and he's slapping a guy across the chest afterwards. I mean, I where do you even start with the WrestleMania stuff? It was a huge success here. I mean, what's your, like, biggest, like, main takeaways from the last couple of days?
So my week started on Wednesday. I'm an independent wrestling manager. Like, I do legit shows. One of the shows, we had, like, WWE star Paul London on there, and it was sold out. So my week started Wednesday. So I had a show Wednesday, a show Thursday. Then Friday, I go to WrestleWorld, which is, like, a convention center full of all the wrestling stuff. And because of Q102, they get me to go, and I got to meet some of the wrestlers and talk to some of them. And then I go to SmackDown on Friday night, which is followed by the WWE Hall of Fame, where Paul Heyman goes into the Hall of Fame with one of the greatest speeches in the history of mankind. Then you go to Saturday, night one. I'm excited. I'm a big Rock fan. The Rock is back at WrestleMania. I only bought one piece of merch. I love Rock. Dude, I got a Brahma Bull tattooed on my leg. I love The Rock. So I was like stoked for night one. And I didn't really care about night two because all I wanted to see was The Rock. And night two was probably the most incredible night of wrestling I've ever seen in my life. So I thought I was like, you ever like overdose in something that you love? Like you listen to an album. Like five nights of wrestling was a lot, but that last night was so goddamn good. I loved it. I loved it, man. God, I love The Rock.
Pagan went down there and he was bumping into people. Like he met some guy who came from like Bangladesh.
Yeah, I met that guy.
Bangladesh guy too? Yeah.
Yeah, I told him he's an idiot. They have it on pay-per-view for $9.99. Why would you travel 30 hours for wrestling? But he did.
Well, I mean, maybe he got to do some other things in Philly.
He got to have a cheesesteak. Lucky him.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not even a wrestling like guru, right? Like I watched it when I was younger, right? Obviously with The Rock and Stone Cold and HBK and Razor Ramon was my all-time favorite. Like, just my all-time.
I remember the ladder match with Shawn Michaels at like
SummerSlam
like '94 or something like that. Here's Captain Dan.
I love it
at the link, by the way. Yeah, sorry.
But, like to reiterate what you said, Captain. Like I tuned in on Sunday just because I'm like, oh, it's in Philly. Like let me just kind of tune in, right? I got Peacock because I watch soccer, so I can see it for free. I just turned it on, and I'm watching. And like you said, those last 5 minutes were like I don't even know like the storyline behind it, but like you see Cena come out, then you see The Rock comes out, and then Taker comes out, and like like it just I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like I had a moment where I literally was sitting there like twiddling on my phone, WrestleMania's on in the background, and I hear the Undertaker's music, and me as like a kid like sits up like the Undertaker out of his casket, and I'm let's go. Like I was like, that's pretty cool.
But they hit on, you know, but what you're saying is like they hit on a bunch of stuff from like the Attitude Era, you know, like I'm almost 40, right? So like I grew up in like the heyday of like ECW. I was too young to I was still in the burbs, and I was like too young to come down to the ECW arena, but we watched it on television. That was like around the time of like, you know, Degeneration X and the New Age Outlaws and all that stuff. And obviously we knew Meanie and the ECW guys and Tommy Dreamer and Sabu and Taz and all that. So not only Captain for them to like, to honor the ECW guys and pay homage to that, you know, Paul Heyman comes out to the ECW theme, which I thought was cool to have that in Philly, but also then to cross the multiple generations of like, you know, what Corey's saying, you know, kids who may not know, I don't know who Seth fucking Rollins is, but like, it's cool to see.
Frickin', other people watch your come mouth.
Yeah, they like, they bridge the gap. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna like. It looks like everybody out here had a hell of a time, and they like broke attendance records or whatever. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like from a withdrawn perspective, it looked like the thing was amazing.
It is like I was there when Taylor Swift was at the link walking around, and this had Taylor Swift vibes. 200,000 people in 3 days. Went to wrestling or 4 days went to wrestling events in Philadelphia. I don't know why they would pick Philadelphia for early April, but they did. I'm glad they did. They go all out, and it was a good time. And I just wish they would do it in May or June. It was kind of, the first night, dude, it was cold. It was real cold.
So that's my question. Like these guys are out there wrestling. Like I understand you're doing physical activity, and like me playing sports in my life, like it's cold. Playing sports in the cold sucks. Like, and like I'm like dressed up. Like I had to imagine like they had some sort of heaters under that cover. No,
they did. They had a WrestleMania 2 or 3 years ago, or actually a while ago in New Jersey, and they had heaters. This one they didn't have heaters. So there was one match where there was a ladder tag team match. So when there's ladder tag team matches, people usually fall to the side of the ring and act like they're knocked out so they can't get involved in the match. So those guys had to lay on the ground when it's 36 degrees and windy. The one guy, The Miz, said it was like it was horrible. So, you know, they had to suffer it. The Rock at the main event on night one, he was in the crowd, just in the wrestling trunks, punching Cody Rhodes in his dumb blonde head. And it was great, but it was so cold. It was so cold. And people were judging the Philly fans, the wrestling dorks online. They're like, oh, this crowd sucks. And I dare anybody to watch 5 hours of wrestling in 30-degree weather. I dare you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a marathon, you know, it wasn't there's a lot going on, right? And multiple days of things. I have a wrestling take, Cap. I want you to tell me if it's accurate or not. You know, because like I probably stopped watching around like 2005 or six or whenever ECW did that like one-off pay-per-view up in New York where JBL was like yelling at everybody from the balcony, whatever. Maybe one night stand.
He attacked my good friend, the Blue Meanie.
He attacked the Meanie. Yeah, JBL attacked the Meanie that night. Yeah. I think like wrestling fans are more educated now. Not that they weren't educated before, but I think they're more responsive to things that are going on in the ring. They understand more what takes skill and effort and what doesn't. They know when a guy's kind of like dogging it or bullshitting it out there. And I think it's just a more, I don't know, give me a synonym for educated. There's just more of awareness of what goes into like.
They're smart. They're called smart marks. They're smart fans. You know, I'm a smart mark. I'm in the industry. So, but like I'm kind of like a magician and I know the tricks and I know even more tricks because I'm behind the scenes. So now when I watch wrestling, how I watch it is like I try to guess what's going to happen. I don't really sit and enjoy the match. I try to solve a puzzle and I hate the way I watch wrestling now, but, wrestling fans are really educated. They're, you know, if you want to go into a rabbit hole, you can watch wrestling shoot interviews and wrestlers. They expose the magic. They expose what's behind the scenes. And it's really tough for the wrestling industry to keep secrets. It's tough for any industry to keep secrets, actually. So, smart marks are, but they're the guys who will pay $400 two nights in a row to watch wrestling.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's tag in my other host for today. We've got Rush Joy. Oh, I removed him. Sorry. Add him back in there, Craig. I shouldn't do your job for you. Here's another wrestling fan. Rush Joy is with us. Russ, do you have a final wrestling point before we move it on to the Phillies here?
Yeah. AEW tanked their business last night.
Okay. So for people here who don't watch AEW, no idea what the fuck you're talking about. Can you please give us like a layman's terms explanation of what happened?
Yeah, I would tell people to go over to the It's Just Wrestling channel and watch this morning's episode. But I will tell you that last night they see a Kincaid gets all upset.
Trying to get people to watch this show and just keep watching this show. Well, that's not what, to like, send listen, them to go to another show.
We're all the face that runs the place, man. Like we're it's all about cross pollination. You know, if you get exclusive, if you start firing shots and you just they don't have a payoff to them, Kevin, that's like what happened last night. AEW showed some behind the scenes footage from London, and you know, it's just not great. Not great. No, not good for the business.
I was just going to say real quick, we used to do this in television all the time. Like we would do a story and then they'd be like, I want you to tease the internet, the website. It was like, oh, the web is new. Right. So if you want more on this story, go to CBSPhilly.com. I'm like, motherfucker, you're trying to get them to keep their eyes on the television right now. Not trying to get them to go to the internet and stop watching what we're doing. Let's focus on what we're doing here. But anyway, AEW, I see the CM Punk stuff.
Yeah, so AEW decided last night that they were going to show the behind-the-scenes footage of CM Punk getting into a little bit of fisticuffs, a little bit of a fracas behind the scenes at Wembley Stadium at All In last summer. They waited 8 months to show it. They tried to work it into storyline. It has backfired immensely, and it proved that what Punk said last week on the MMA Hour leading into WrestleMania with Ariel Helwani was, I mean, barring there being some other clip out there, Punk told people last week what happened and AEW tried to spin it and it did not go well for them last night.
All right, well, that's a good summation, thank you for that. Cap, what's up with the Phils? Did you give Eddie Perez a mouthful at the opening weekend? How's the scene been at the ballpark so far?
The ballpark's way too crowded. They're sold out almost every night now. Even who do we have in there? Cincinnati Reds. There was like 30,000 people when it was like 20 degrees. It's horrible. I hate it when the ballpark is crowded, but the team's going to be good. So it's going to be crowded all season.
Now you're not one of those people who's like, I've been here every game for the last X amount of years. And then you're going to get grumpy when everybody else starts showing up. Is that what you're doing here?
No, I just hate crowds. I hate crowds. Oh. I much prefer it empty, but you know, I do like the team being good. So, you know, I'll pay the penalty of the team being good. I just like it when there's 19,000 people.
This sounds like the old Union fans getting all pissy when they started winning and people started showing up to games, which is actually kind of fitting.
I'm a leave. Like you said, with the Messi game last year, like as great as that was the biggest clusterfuck of all time. Like, I just wanted to go watch the game, have a good time, and there's fucking people sitting on the goddamn bridge watching from over the top of the stadium to see. Like, I'm like, I get it. I understand, Cap. I feel your pain. I definitely, like, I mean, there's something to be said about the Phillies, like, when they're good and the electricity. And, like, I went to a bunch of playoff games last year, and it was unfucking believable. But, like, going to, like, see them play the Marlins or the Reds in
– yeah. March, there shouldn't be more than 25,000 people watching the Nationals, you know? There shouldn't be that. But they do the – well, actually, they had to buy one, get one dog night, but the weather was garbage and nobody showed up. And they had to throw out, like, 20,000 hot dogs or something crazy like that because they overcooked hot dogs.
Did you – so what do you make of Pagan's efforts to do Dollar Dog Night in the parking lot?
I swear to God, he has stock in the Hatfield Hot Dog Company. Why does he care so much about these goddamn hot dogs being sold? I don't know. I don't know what his problem is. I try to explain to him, nobody who works in that stadium likes Dollar Dog Night. Nobody. Not the security guards, not the ushers, not the vendors. Maybe the guys who sell them, like the beer salesmen, because they make really good tips that day. Yeah. But everybody else doesn't get it. It's horrible. The hot dogs are garbage. I don't know what his... He just, you know what it is? It's an easy way to get the people to like you. He wants the people to like him. So that's what he's trying to do.
I think it's
Aren't you supposed to be a man of the people? Because that's a very elitist take out of you.
Who,
in
me?
Fairness.
I am a man of the people. I used to work at the stadium.
That doesn't sound like a man of the people thing.
Stadium, and I used to see what these drunk college kids used to do to my beloved ballpark. The baseball game is a family event. And these college kids take it over with the beer and the hot dogs, and they throw it around like savages. Well, guess what, savages? No more dollar dog nights. So happy.
Make them pay close to full price. That's right.
Good. I don't want
You're
them to come to
the ballpark. Billionaire class sympathizer. What a shame. What a shame.
Now, wait. I will say that Pagan is doing a charity angle to all of this. Yeah. The money for DDN is going.
Well, that's not that.
How much does he care about the charity? He canceled it. The game still happened. I guess
he rescheduled it.
So, but here's my take on DDN. First of all, it's a great running bit for the site. By the way, yes, the update. Oh. Dollar Dog Night Tailgate has been rescheduled to Tuesday, April 16th at 5 p.m. Lot G next to Xfinity Live. All proceeds go to Phil Abundance. We may get a double dip because the Sixers may have a game that night, depending on how the seating works out. But yes, it's good. It's a good little content bit that he's doing. But I think Captain, I'll do like the devil's advocate kind of side with Captain here a little bit. I think Pagan is more in love with the idea of Dollar Dog Night than the actuality of Dollar Dog Night. Right. I mean, like the thought of like, you know, we're all going to go enjoy it. But yes, the college kids are screwing it up. People throwing hot dogs and shit like that. Not his fault. Not our fault. People who blame Crossing Broad for the death of Dollar Dog Night is one of the most fugazi things I've ever heard of, because he was tossing them out to people specifically and like picking them out in the crowd and having fun. He wasn't the dude just, you know, chucking them like willy nilly all over the place. I don't think he deserves any blame for that.
The Flyers did Dollar Dog Night this season with a packed house. It was supposed to be pretzel night, but it ended up becoming Dollar Dog Night. You know what happened? People didn't throw hot dogs. They just ate the hot dogs. Nobody's going to a baseball game or to a hockey game expecting a five-star or a Michelin-star hot dog. They want to get a dollar hot dog because food is expensive at games. It's a great promotion. I cannot fathom taking it up for the Middletons.
John Middleton's my good friend. I don't know. I'm sorry. I stick up for my friends. So, it's fine. You know who else are my friends? The people, the vendors in the ballpark. And nobody speaks up for the little man. Like, I support the Aramark workers who were on strike because they had to go through a dollar dog night. Like, God bless them. They earn every penny.
They should get a raise. Yeah, that's if you have to go through a dollar dog night as a vendor, that's worth healthcare alone. I mean, come on now. Like, they brought out they had the inflatable fat cat and they had Scabby the rat, I guess, out at the Wells Fargo Center the other night.
These people would never last a day working at the JFK pool in Pottsville, Pennsylvania, when the rain delay happens. Okay, when the rain delay happens, and all of Pottsville's finest flood the concession stand worked by a bunch of 16-year-olds. All right, that's
hard. There's nothing fine about
Dollar Dog Night. Get out.
Nothing fine about Pottsville. Take that back.
Pottsville's a fantastic place. If you can get past a lot of the not fantastic.
I once got a speeding ticket. I'll never forget it.
Where'd you get the speeding ticket at? Where'd you get the speeding ticket?
I'm not telling you. I hope you get caught.
Because you deserved it. Because you deserved it. They probably should have thrown you into the Schuylkill County prison while you were there.
It
would have spared us from a bullshit take like Dollar Dog Night sucks. Would have spared us.
Well, anyway, let's shift to something else that's slightly less controversial. Am I the only one in Philadelphia who likes the City Connect jerseys? I think they're awesome.
The Union jerseys?
No, don't do the Union jersey. Don't do the Union jersey thing because it's
they're people fine. Say
they're
fine.
Okay,
the hats are nice. The hats are nice.
I think when the hats came out, people who were anti-jersey to begin with said, "Okay, I can get with this a little bit." But let's be honest: like everybody in Philadelphia hates anything that's new. You know, it's not Philly's colors, but it's City of Philadelphia colors. Here's Captain for people listening on the podcast or playing the video of him going down to the team store when they released it. Now, I would say the only thing I don't like is like the Spinal Tap looking font on the front. I don't get, but I got no problem with the color. See, Corey, you can chime in on this because now originally the Sons of Ben colors were the city flag colors, but the union did not have this motif.
That wasn't a union thing. That was an MLS thing, but that's a whole different time conversation for another time. We wanted them to be baby blue and yellow, but like they had a couple teams that wore baby blues at the time, like Kansas City and all that other stuff. And originally we wanted the team to be called Philadelphia Athletic instead of the Union, and MLB poo-pooed that because, you know, that whole thing.
The Philly A's.
Yeah. Mm. So they owned the trademark and the copyright top of that, whatever. So and then the conversation started about how we were going to pick the colors of the team. And it was between one group of people wanted black and gold. One group of people wanted baby blue and yellow. So the compromise was navy blue and gold. That was kind of the compromise. And that's how that came to be. As far as the hats are dope. I love the hats. The jerseys, bro, as a guy that plays old man softball, reminded me of a Delco Bar League softball jersey.
Beer League, yeah. That's you weren't the only person that said that. A lot of people had that observation, man, like Beer League softball. But I don't – see, my thing, Cap, is like we got enough basic, boring shit in MLB, right? I mean, how many teams have like a road gray with like red or whatever? They're only going to be wearing these so many times, right? There's a ton of games. So I don't have any problem infusing a little more personality in the game. Give me Victus bats that look like this. You know, give me jerseys that look like this. Give me some color. Give me something different. I know that baseball fans are parochial and traditional, and you know, Philly is slow to warm up to new things in general. But I got no problem with more color, with something different. They're not replacing, you know, the classic uniforms of this. It's a side uniform. It's something different. It's not going to kill anybody. You know
that we know of.
No, I agree with you, Kev. Like baseball, it's like you do. You have the home whites and the road grays, and that's really it. A hot take, my favorite Phil's jersey of all time is the cream jerseys. I absolutely love them. Oh. Sorry. So I just – something about it, just it's fucking makes me smile. I mean, I get it's the red pinstripes and all that stuff, but I love the creams, the Sunday creams. They're some of my favorites.
The number 7 on the Phillies jersey. See, I'm pointing it out in the video right there.
Oh, God.
That's the worst part of the whole jersey.
It's an incomplete question mark.
It looks like an incomplete two.
It's and I also – I don't like the P. Like, the P is something that we – you know, if you go around the stadium, you'll see they have different generations of the P all around. Right. I don't see them hanging that P somewhere. I don't see that getting – but the jersey's not made for a middle-aged man. It's made for a younger audience, and I think they're gonna like it. I like it. It's not horrible.
It's made for the Dollar Dog Night guys.
The one that we the one that we saw the sneak photo of earlier a few months ago, like the one that somebody somehow got a copy of. It didn't look exactly like this. I like the way the color blends from dark to light. It's all right. Everything's cool except the number 7. It'll be fine. We'll get used to it.
Well, the 7 looks apropos. It looks like a question mark because we don't really know what we're going to get out of Trey Turner. Maybe another standing ovation this year is required. We shall see. But I like different stuff, Ben. I'm like the only person on the planet who also likes the Eagles playing in Brazil. So
that's fine. That's fine.
You know, this is like on par for me.
Hey, Craig, can you scrub really quick back to the design on the front, because there's a way to fix these. Pause that for a sec. Hear me out. You know how the Nuggets have that one jersey where they've got the skyline in the back? You know what I'm talking about? It's the white, and then it's got like the it's like the classic jersey or whatever that they bring out for some home games. If they had done this, slightly different font, but they had done the city skyline that's on the inside, like where the tag is. If they had done a jersey like that, I think this would have worked, because it's the City Connect. Why wouldn't all of the City Connect jerseys have the skyline of every respective city?
There's probably like one thing, the skyline changes every like year, so I don't identify the skyline anymore. Like, the skyline of Philadelphia changes all the time. And I don't know how long they're going to keep this uniform, you know?
Well, it's a money-making opportunity, though, because if you change the skyline, then every year you need to buy the new jersey. Huh?
Yeah, my good friend John Middleton wouldn't do that to us.
Well, that's more of an MLS and Premier League thing. Like, Arsenal comes out with some shit that's not even close to looking like their colors or anything like it. But I remember, you know, like, people threw a fit when, like, Boathouse Row was on the Sixers jerseys a couple years ago. And I'm like, it's different. I don't, you know, okay, no, it's not the most blue-collar thing out there. Like, a bunch of, like, a yachting reference, necessarily yachting, rowing reference, you know what I mean? So maybe that went hand in hand with Chris Heck and the blue collar comments that got him in hot water. But I like different stuff, man. I think it's cool. I think people get used to it like they get used to everything in Philly. Captain,
the Lehigh Iron Pigs dropped a Mummers jersey a few months ago. And when I saw that, I was really hopeful for the Philly City Connect, because I'm like, They got it, because I thought that Mummers one was phenomenal. And, you know, I'm all right with it. I thought they could have been a little bit more daring. It didn't take enough risk.
I got hate mail.
They need to go back to Gabe Kapler and be bold.
Be bold. Here's the Mummers one that Cap's talking about. Yeah, this is really creative. I got hate mail about this, actually, because I wrote, like, they did a T-shirt, too, and there was a picture of 2nd Street in Philadelphia. I wrote 2nd Street in the story. And not 2 Street. Yes, the sign is 2nd Street. They call it 2 Street. And then some woman yelled at me for not calling it 2 Street.
Did she yell at you, or did she write that in a comment?
Well, no, she wrote it in an email. She wrote me an email and said, "Why did you call it 2nd Street and not 2 Street?" I'm like, "Well, the sign
says your email, right? You blocked your email."
Hopefully I did. I don't know. I get a lot of them every week, so some of them kind of fall by the wayside. Why wouldn't the Phillies do a Mummers one? I don't know. It's a good question. Cap will have to ask his friend John Middleton why they didn't do.
I see him at the ballpark all the time. I'll ask him next time I see him.
Listen, man, before I get you out of here, did they figure out the traffic in the Northeast? I feel like the last time we had you on, you couldn't make a doctor's appointment because, like, all the roads were closed in Bridesburg or something. What is the traffic situation up there now?
All right. So the other day, a jerk off drove into a bridge. These truck drivers don't know how to drive anymore. Also, I don't know if you notice, it seems to me a train derails somewhere in their station every other day. So I don't know what's going on with the infrastructure, but for some reason, it's all falling apart around Bridesburg. They're doing I-95 construction. They shut down. We had this beautiful exit. It was exit 27. And I didn't know about this, but it was my favorite place on earth. They took it away from me, and now, like, I knew it became my favorite place, because I used to get off 95, take a turn, and I was home. Now I have to get off Aramingo Avenue, and now everybody in the world has to get off this exit, and Amazon is everywhere in Bridesburg. I just ride my scooter and walk everywhere now. It's horrible. Where do you live, in Jersey? I see that lawnmower of yours. That's Jersey, right?
No, I'm up in Montco, man. Yeah, I got the Ego out the other day. It was beautiful, man.
Yeah, man. I'm like, awesome. Wow. See, I have a weed whacker for my backyard. That's it. I pick up the dog shit.
Sorry,
and the weed whack. And I have a big pile of AstroTurf. Once in a while, I'll put some, like, shampoo on there, and I'll hose it down, because that's where the dogs piss. But traffic, dude, the traffic in the city is horrible.
Terrible.
But I went to Orlando. I went to Clearwater for a spring training game. And I was like, I was down there and I was like, oh, I like this. I could move down here. And then I drove in traffic from Clearwater to Orlando and I almost attempted suicide 3 or 4 times. It was horrible.
It's terrible.
The traffic, it goes 3 miles per hour for 2 hours. You're stuck in it. I have ADHD. I can't wait in line. So traffic really drives me like insane. Like whenever I go to the stadium, I only go to places that have no line. I've never had any good food. I always eat the vegan shit, you know, because there's never a line there. I can't stand lines. I hate traffic.
Which Night of Mania did you go to?
All of them. Everyone.
You went to both?
Yes.
How was your experience getting out on night one?
I don't park in parking lots. I park outside a parking lot so I can flee. Okay. I was sitting in section M, which is like near 95. I actually left during the main event, like when they were doing their entrances, and I got right behind the exit so I could get the hell out of there.
It's a violation.
It's not a violation.
So I'll tell you though.
I didn't watch Cody Rhodes enter. I don't care about Cody Rhodes. I was there for the Brahma Bull. Thank you.
But then you didn't stay to watch him pin the eventual world champion. It's fine. But that night, you got out of your seat.
I stayed till the very end, and then I got the hell out of there.
And then you got out of there.
But you fled
from your seat like you were in the Middle East or something, like trying to, you know, dodge. Okay.
Well, those are dangerous places. People should flee from there. It makes sense. Not a violation. I watched the whole match. You can watch it on my YouTube channel.
Getting out of your seat so you can kind of like, you know, scurry away to
And I bought merchandise. I bought merchandise too. The lines, all those idiots waited in line for, you know, t-shirts. I got my Rock t-shirt. I took a piss. I bought a soda. I stood there right at the entrance when they walked in and walked out. And did I mention I didn't pay for my ticket? So I don't, no violation whatsoever. I'm pretty much living the best fucking life. That's how I see it. No lines.
Cap, we'll have to get you on. We'll have to get Captain on KYW News Radio to do the traffic report one of these days. It'll just be Captain calling everybody a dickhead. Here,
95 fucking sucks because people are driving like jerk-offs. People, when you get on Girard Ave, you have to merge. Get to the fucking far left. That's KYW. That's the traffic on the twos. Yeah. But I hate that when they KYW, it's like they do the traffic for 4 minutes and then they'll do like 2 news stories and then they'll do the traffic. It's always traffic.
It's just traffic. And I feel like there's more traffic and weather than anything. That's why I tune in traffic and weather on the twos for the rare occasion that I go down to the city tonight, but we'll get you on news radio and you can do your not tonight dickhead play of the game as well. So we'll let you do some sports too. I think you would be a good addition to,
I'm just thinking about Bob Kelly when he's ready to retire from Fox 29. Like, what better way to start the morning, you know? The Cap and Mike Jarek in the morning. What could possibly go wrong?
Bob Kelly doesn't know this, but we have a major feud going on. I don't like the way he talks.
You don't like the way Bob Kelly talks?
Please elaborate.
He talks like Rachel Ray. I don't try to call a sandwich a Sammy, and it just drove me nuts. I said, nobody I know. Because I think he's from my neighborhood, and nobody in my age group ever called a sandwich a Sammy. And I just hate the way he talks. It drives me insane.
All right. Well, listen, before we get you out of here, we'll do a question from T. He says, Captain, who's your tool bag of the week?
That's a great question.
It's a lot of good candidates this week.
OJ Simpson. Right. Cause it's the last week he's qualified for it. Technically, because he's dead, but earlier he was alive. So OJ Simpson is the tool bag of the week. Google Ron Goldman and see what he did to his child. It's horrible. He killed him.
Bringing it full circle.
We don't have to Google it. You fucking spoiled it, didn't you?
Oh, Google Ron Goldman Jr. then.
Well, we're getting out of here. Well, getting out of here on a high note, but thank you for bringing it full circle to the beginning of the conversation. Cap, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man.
Thank you.
Watch out for the dickheads in Bridesburg. And
don't be jerk-offs.
Don't be jerk-offs. We'll see you next time, man.
See.
Don't get a speeding ticket in Schuylkill County.
Fuck off, Pottsville.
Yeah, that's right.
never a dull moment with the Philly captain on the show. Yeah, so anyway.
I'm just trying to get over him saying he doesn't like how Bob Kelly talks.
Because he talks like Rachel Ray?
Because he talks
so much about Rachel
Philly
Ray.
Captain. I've never previously met Philly Captain. I don't know if I will ever again speak to Philly Captain, but I find the whole concept rich. He sounds like somebody from Delco trying to talk like Gilbert Gottfried. There's a lot of Gilbert in his voice.
Well, for a little while, we had Delco representing. Corey had to drop off, by the way. Thanks to Corey for jumping on. We had somebody from Delco. We had somebody from Schuylkill County. We had somebody from Boyertown. And we had somebody from Bridesburg on the show. So I think the white trash angle we had perfectly covered on today's show. Or Italian trash, in your case. I'm sorry.
Man, I can't even, like, I wish I could do a Delco accent. I could do a lot of accents. That's not one. I could do a Gilbert Gottfried voice, but I can't do it doing Delco. That's going to be my new assignment. All right.
I don't like Pottsfield. Why would I like Pottsfield? They gave me a speeding ticket. Now, if I say Wooder, does that make me sound like the Philly Captain? If I say Wooder and I say Bridesburg and go check out my YouTube. By the way, you gave me shit because I said people should go listen to It's Just Wrestling for their recap of pro wrestling stuff. And then you had Craig making $450,000 behind the glass showing videos ad nauseum of the Captain's YouTube channel.
You don't,
we're effectively doing the same thing here.
You don't get it. You have no concept of what I'm talking about. I'm trying to get people to keep their eyes here and their ears here. So playing stuff on here, it doesn't divert them elsewhere. But if it's like, go listen to my wrestling podcast. Now, I don't want people clicking off of the show. Now I want people to listen.
Well, they're not going
to
leave. They're not going to leave the show right now. They're going to have the seed is planted in their cabeza, and they're going to be like, "Oh, I'm going to go to that." Oh, look at that. I love Craig. No, Craig, go to the YouTube. The YouTube number is so much more impressive. The subscriber number over there on YouTube is so much better than the Twitter. That's not even the most recent episode. You have to scroll down a little bit there, Craig. I love Craig. Craig's my favorite. What a guy. What a guy. We love Craig. Love Craig.
Oh,
all right, take
gosh.
It off the screen. I don't need Kincaid having a conniption. All right.
No conniption. I like when the show goes off the rails, man. I like when we're just kind of winging it here. This is not, you know, sports radio where I'm like, you know, banging the table to get it back to the Eagles or whatever. You know, as long as I see a nice number up there at the top, then, you know, it's all good with me.
By the way, this I'm glad Craig that we were in sync, because I was about to ask to pull this up. Sean O'Neill says Skook Peeps got different accents too. Do you want to hear what a Skook sounds like? If you're from Schuylkill County, which is Northeast Delco, okay. So people always have like a dip of tobacco in the lip often, right? And they just got done like a bender up at a bush party. That's how I order, right? You're going down to Hosey, get yings and wings. Okay, so that's like a little skookism. I will tell you though, Kev, I think I've said this before. It may not have been on this show. Mm-hmm. Delco, I hold Delco in a really nice part of my heart, because Delco to me is Southeast Pennsylvania's Skook. You're just as likely to see a pregnant woman taking a drag of a Marlboro or a Camel outside of a Wawa in Delco as you would be to see her do the same thing outside of a Sheetz in Pottsville. So there's something – we're unifying. Delco and Skook.
Yeah, it's a little bit of self-deprecating humor and a backhanded compliment in there at the same time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I do the same thing as well, so I guess we'll just roll with it. So where do you want to go from here? Like, what's I guess we got to talk about the Flyers being cooked.
Do we?
Yeah.
Do we?
I was watching STG. I guess the post game Montreal the other night, and you and Anthony disagree. Like his take from the beginning has been like the Flyers weren't ever supposed to be here, right? But your take differs from his. How?
So I guess it comes down to if you believe in sliding scales or not, right?
Goalpost. So,
yeah, like they should have been really bad. The expectation was that they'd be really bad. From ownership down, the message was it's a rebuild. And Torts did what he does, which is take a very bad group of players. And we brought up the stats on the show, but you know, if you look back at his 2020 and 2021 Columbus Blue Jackets teams, and you look at last year's record and this year's record, the trend is there. He pushes really hard for the first two-thirds of the season, and then the law of diminishing returns inevitably kicks in, and the teams kind of fall apart down the stretch. And I think that if you're being honest about it, you know, I saw like WIP was running polls about it, 97.5 was running polls about it. Is it fair to say that a team that was supposed to be so bad is a disappointment for falling apart down the stretch? I say yes, because what you did is you overperformed, but you got people believing that you could make the playoffs and that you could make a run. And so I don't think that the preseason predictions and everything really matter all that much once you've shown that, like, hey, we're actually better than expected, or we're capable of, you know, punching above our weight class. Them falling apart, it's not the same thing as watching the Phillies fall apart the last couple of years, okay, like choking in the playoffs. Or watching the Sixers and watching Joel Embiid, you know, get hurt or have gastroenteritis or whatever in the playoffs and, like, watching them fall apart. This is different because it was rebuild, rebuild, rebuild all year. They overperformed. All they had to do, Kev, after the gauntlet, the seven-game stretch, was play 500 hockey. And you make the playoffs. That's it. Play 500 hockey. Mm-hmm. And it's not even against good players, like against good teams. Buffalo, Montreal twice, Chicago. And they just shit the bed. They've lost 8 straight games. The joke had been, hey, at least the Flyers aren't going to lose 10 straight this year. They can. They can actually lose 11 straight to close out the year. And the funny thing is they're actually getting themselves even closer to potentially getting a top 10 pick in the draft. That's how bad the end of the season has been for them. So, like, I do think that it's fair to look at a team that's overperformed and then say, yo, you don't even have to play well down the stretch against these bad teams. You could put some passable games together, make the playoffs, get people excited. And they puked all over themselves. This is a horrific choke job relative to what they had shown they could do all season.
2 points here. Number one, Ford is doing something in the comments that I can't stand. I can't stand when people, what did he say? He said, I told you 6 months ago, I'm paraphrasing here because I lost it. Ford is saying that I said months ago that they would miss the playoffs. Listen, Ford, love you, man. You were great on the show. We had you on. Nobody gives a fuck who was the first or the last to say that this team would miss the playoffs or this coach should be fired. Like, the I told you so thing is the most annoying thing. Phil Kiedel used to do this to me all the time. He'd be like, I told you Brett Brown was a fraud 17 years ago. I don't care. I'm going to watch the games. Maybe they win. Maybe they lose. Maybe they fire the coach. Maybe they're not. Everybody wants to be the first, and they want to remind you that they were the first. They want to say, I knew that the Sixers were not going to get the seventh seed. I told you that 4 months ago. Nobody cares. Thank you. I appreciate you. Anyway, the other thing, Russ, that bothers me is this is another, like, nebulous nothing kind of concept, and that is the idea of players quitting on a coach. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. Do you think the Flyers busted their ass and blocked shots and skated their butts off for many, many months for Torts just to make it to, like, the final 12 games of the year and then quit on him?
No.
Okay. Why do people think that? Like, yes, you can say that the Sean Couturier thing, maybe that made...
Well, that was stupid.
Feel a certain way, but so you're going to work your ass off for 80% of the year, and it's like, oh, now I don't want to work hard for the coach, and now I'm going to phone it in when the playoffs are right there.
Well, there's a thought that maybe the players are playing scared, and they have since he scratched Couturier. And I always say this, but, like, the smooth-brained koala fans, you know koalas have smooth brains. Did you know that?
I do now.
The part of your brain that's like the squiggly part, right? Your whole brain. That's the part that allows you to think critically. Did you know the koalas are so stupid that if you pick the leaves off of the eucalyptus plant, they don't know what to do with them? They won't eat them. They don't know. If you put it on a dish right in front of them, they don't know. They can watch you. I can watch you take the leaf off the plant and put it in front of him. And he won't know what to do with it. He's got to eat it off of the plant, yeah? So, like, it's a beautiful, smooth brain there if you're watching on the YouTube and on Twitter and on Facebook.
A zoology lesson for everybody.
But anyway, so, like, I like to say smooth brain koala brains because people are not capable of critically thinking about the Flyers and about John Tortorella. The problem is there is a human element to this. And a lot of these people like to go, well, Sean Couturier is playing like a fourth liner. You know, he's getting paid $7+ million a year. Yeah, he's the captain. Why does he suck so much? He's still one of your best 12 forwards on any given night. He's still better than Nick Deslauriers. He's still better than Ollie Lixell. He's better than Cam Atkinson. And yet, Torts scratched the captain. I think that there was probably a little bit in here that you say, all right, maybe he's trying to galvanize the team, get them to hate him, and they'll work collectively together. And it hasn't worked. There were some initial returns for like 2 games, and then the bottom fell out. And I think the bigger issue that they ran into is they're just not a talented enough team. They had some serious injuries on the blue line. Seeler was out for a while. Drysdale was out for a while. They traded away Sean Walker at the deadline for a first-round pick, which is a fantastic move. But all of those issues together kind of compounded a lot of problems they had, and they just didn't have enough. They didn't have the horses that they needed down the stretch to get them across the finish line. I don't think they quit on the coach, but I do think that, like, scratching the captain, especially with a team that has as much youth as this one, you start playing from a place of fear. Bundy said it on the show, the all-time leader in games played by a defenseman in Flyers history. If there's somebody who would know, it'd probably be him. And he said he thinks that they played scared from that point on. I don't know how anybody could try to refute it. They haven't been the same team.
Yeah, and my final point on that concept, too, is like, you know, Torts We Know has been a press the right buttons kind of guy throughout the year, you know, like making these like drastic kind of like, I'm going to bench this guy, or, you know, one week I'm going to call the players pussies and the next week I'm going to praise them for their effort. Right. And so you press all these different buttons to get the desired effect for any particular week. But what that does, Russ, is it results in mixed messaging, right? Where the players are like, okay, so are we pussies this week, or do you appreciate us?
He didn't call them little kitty cats, but he did say last week, he said, soft.
Yes.
And that was the retort. And then after the wheels really fell off and they started getting their faces kicked in, the other night after the game, is after the Montreal game, where they got embarrassed 9-3. Like, an absolutely horrific performance.
And he's got their,
like,
back on that one. But
these are a lot of great guys.
Yeah.
It's a good locker room. Is it? Because you just called them soft last week. So which is it?
Yeah.
Are they soft or are they good guys?
Yeah.
Are they up for this? Like you said, they weren't a week ago, or is it that they aren't talented enough or they're wiped out? Are they wiped out, like you said, 2 weeks ago? Where is it? And this is the problem, Kevin. This is the problem that, like, again, the Koala Brain fans miss out on this because they've developed this blind loyalism for this guy. He, to me, is, and I've said this since the day he was hired, he is Doc Rivers in the NHL. These guys like to hold on to a championship they won 2 decades ago in a very different league with stacked rosters. They have not found the same success since. They have an antiquated way of going about coaching the game or about interacting with the new version of player. And if you don't like where the leagues are trending in terms of how coaches talk to players and players react, tough shit. It's where it's going. I just don't think he's the right coach for this team at this point of what their rebuild is. And that's been the thing since he was hired. Right coach, wrong time. The idea now, and the report came out a couple days ago, the idea that he'll be back next year and the assistants will remain in place. Shaw has done a great job with the blue line, getting more out of them and more out of that group than anyone expected him to. Rocky Thompson's been overseeing the worst power play in the league, historically bad power play. Yeah. And there has been nary a mention of moving on from him. And in any other year or with any other head coach, there'd be people calling for his head. The media, post-game, you know, post-skate, they'd be asking, what the hell are we doing here? How haven't you made a change at assistant coach? Or on the power play. And a lot of the media won't do it. They saw what happened to Anthony. And I don't know if that's why. I'm not saying that they're not credible human beings. A lot of them are great people. They come on the Press Row show. But I don't think anybody wants to have the coach, you know, put the target on them like he has with Ant and he has with, you know, other reporters in other markets before.
So the Flyers' leading point producer this year is Travis Konecny. I think he's got 65. He is tied for 58th in the NHL. The Flyers do not have a guy in the top 55 for point production, you know, and while yes, you've gotten 40 some odd combined points out of like Garnet Hathaway and Ryan Poehling of, you know, getting fourth liners to play like third liners and second liners, the Conn Smythe, it wins you not, you know, and when they get into situations like the power play or overtime where all of a sudden space and speed and skill become exemplified, then you really see their shortcomings and you're like, oh, they don't have any high end offensive talent here. I watched the Oilers play the Knights last night and I was like, holy shit, I feel like I'm watching a different game here. Yeah. You know, Joe Pavelski, who's like as old as I am, has more points than anybody on the Flyers right now. And yes, if Flyers, but if Owen Tippett played with that group of people in Dallas, then yes, I'm sure he would have more points than he does now. But still, that was a thing that I used to prove a point. So yeah, and I would just say too, Ford is like up my ass in the comments because he's saying I do the told you so routine. No, I'm not talking about I told you so. I'm talking about like being first thing. Like, oh, I was the first to tell you that like Brett Brown was a fraud. I want everybody to know that I called Brett Brown a fraud like 10 months ago. I don't think we do that on the show. Anyway, Russ, I have one more show before I go on vacation. So we only have two opportunities to talk about the NFL draft here. I'm going to bring it back to the Eagles. We're going to mandate getting it back to the Eagles on this show. Craig,
I have to go bounce for a little. Can you hold down fine. The fort here for a few minutes until I come back?
This is a monologue for me. Yeah, Craig, if you can pull up.
I will come back. I will come back to you, Kev.
Okay.
Reach out. I wouldn't leave you hanging. All right.
No, it's all right. I can monologue.
My stomach light needs your stomach light. We can all phone home together. It's a great line from the movie Goon.
Thank you. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Craig, if you have the Eagles column from yesterday, Wednesday, I want to talk about that a little bit, because as we get closer to the draft now, I've kind of settled on two outcomes that I personally would be fine with, that I would accept. And those are, let me set it up first. So they've got three picks in the first two rounds. They've got a first round draft pick, number 22. Then they pick, I want to say 50 and 53, a couple of picks apart in the second round. So they have a first and they have 2 seconds. You'll just assume for the sake of the exercise, they're going to use those and they're not going to trade. I'm sure they'll make a trade. They always make some kind of trade, whether packaging picks later or moving up in the first round, the second round, whatever. What are your positions of need if you're the Eagles? Do you need a quarterback? No. Do you need a running back? No. Do you need a left tackle? No. Do you need a left guard? No. Do you need a center? No, assuming that Cam Jurgens is going to go back over to there and replace Jason Kelsey. Do you need a right tackle? Not right now. You're going to have to replace Lane Johnson eventually. So really the only spot that you need on the offensive side is right guard. You know, you've got Tyler Steen there that they may use there. You have Matt Hennessy who's in the fold now as well. You do need depth behind Dallas Goedert. You got nothing behind Dallas Goedert at tight end. You've got nothing behind A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith at wide receiver 3. I know they went out and got Paris Campbell and Devontae Parker, but I don't, you know, again, there's a steep drop off there, and there's going to be some targets going. So that there's going to be 25 to 35 targets going to that person regardless. So, you know, my thought was like maybe you use your later round draft picks on going depth on offense. But Originally, my thought was you use your first three picks, round 1, 22 overall, best cornerback on the board. Round 2, number 50 overall, best edge rusher on the board. Round 2, number 53 overall, best linebacker on the board. Because, I mean, quite frankly, I didn't even go over the defense, but you need something at every level of the defense. You need help in the secondary. You need linebackers, and you're going to need an edge rusher to replace Hassan Reddick. I know they brought in Bryce Huff, but the only spot on the defense I feel really, really good about is the interior with Jalen Carter and Milton Williams and hopefully Jordan Davis turning the corner. So my thought was like, give me one player at each level of the defense. And then rounds 4, 5, and 6. Okay. That's look for tight end depth, O-line receiver, you know, not in any particular order. I mean, they have stumbled into decent enough players in the fourth round. Avante Maddox before his injury issues. Matt Pryor was a dude that they found in the sixth who gave them at least some decent starts for a time. And so that was originally what I was thinking there. However, you know, as you probably agree, it's hard to dispute or have any problem ever with the Philadelphia Eagles drafting offensive line in the first round or the second round or the third round. And I know that, yes, you do have a Danny Watkins that comes along every so often. You do have an Andre Dillard every so often. But this is the paragraph I wrote about. I want to read it verbatim here. I started to think about it a little bit more and came to the conclusion that I'd have zero problem with the Eagles going offensive line in the first or second round. Sure, they've got Tyler Steen. They've got Matt Hennessy in the mix at right guard. And even though Cam Jurgens is presumably moving inside to replace Kelsey, you technically have 80% of your offensive line returning. Are you satisfied with that going into the year? Most fans would probably say yes, but we know how the Eagles value the offensive line. And because of that, I'm never going to complain about a first or second round offensive line draft selection. Not now, not ever. Like I said, you get the occasional Andre Dillard, Danny Watkins, but more often than not, you get Lane Johnson, Landon Dickerson, Jurgens, or even then Isaac Seumalo on the second, third round fringe. It's a decent enough draft for interior offensive linemen. Dane Brugler, you guys probably know, is the guy who does like 300 page draft breakdown every year. He has 6 guards graded as first through third round talent. There's a guy up in Washington who's first round talent, best guard on the board. They could go for him. You could go, you know, guard, cornerback, linebacker with 1-2-2. You could go guard, cornerback, edge rusher, and then use your fourth round pick on a linebacker. It's a stronger draft class at the top in the premier positions that they already have, which is strange. You know, what are we at, 4 or 5 quarterbacks all with first round grades that are probably going to go near the very top there? So you've got that. The Eagles don't need a quarterback. Wide receiver has a ton of depth in this draft. And part of me is like, well, you know, I could see Howie Roseman or, you know, go in that. I mean, if you just think that position group is strong enough, then maybe you dip into that just because you don't think that there's going to be a draft in the next 5 or 6 years of a position group that's that strong. So I write, regardless of individual player evaluation, the one thing that most analysts seem to agree on is that this class is particularly strong at offensive tackle, quarterback, and receiver, 3 positions where the Eagles already have high-end talent. However, Lane Johnson can't play forever, and if the Eagles feel like he's close to retirement, this would be the draft in which to find his replacement, but that doesn't answer the right guard question. And then on the defensive side, cornerback and edge classes are better than the linebacker class by far. Most of the analysts that I like, Lance Zierlein, Dane Brugler, they grade out 5 to 7 corners and edge rushers with first or second round grades. But the best linebacker is probably Michigan's Junior Colson or Texas A&M's Edgar and Cooper. A couple like third roundish guys that the Eagles may hope slide into the fourth, but there's no consensus like first round linebackers. So I think linebacker you can let slide. I feel like if they come out of it with you know, like a cornerback at number 22, and then maybe an edge rusher, maybe an offensive lineman or something, I'm fine with that. But you know, yeah, there's just been a little less, you know, intrigue, I guess, maybe on the draft this year. I think people are still burned out a little bit on the Eagles following you know, the way that last year ended. And yeah, there's been a lot going on with the Sixers and the Flyers and whatnot. So you know, but we'll get some juice going again for the Eagles as we go here. I think Howie Roseman's done a good job at the draft in recent years. You know, the jury is still out on guys like Jordan Davis and N'Kobe Dean for sure. But you know, early returns on the philosophy of drafting the best players from the best SEC teams, Landon Dickerson, Devontae Smith, you know, that's a strategy that has so far worked more than it has not. So hopefully they keep it there. Two more things I wanted to talk about, depending on whether or not Russ comes back. Craig, if you have go to the top of the Sixers Twitter feed and pull the tweet that they have there about the statue for Allen Iverson. They are putting a AI statue on the walk at the training complex in Camden, where they have Charles Barkley and Dr. J and Will Chamberlain and all those guys. And so this is a good tweet from them, where they say, guess the pose that we're going to put on the sculpture, which I believe is being revealed tomorrow, Friday. So the options here are the hand to ear, crossover, dunk, the step over, AI holding the MVP trophy, and the iconic photo shoot where he's kind of sitting there with his hand on his chin. Excuse me. There's only one answer for what the pose should be here, and that's hand to ear. That's the most iconic look that AI has, and it fits the best on a statue anyway. The MVP one is dumb because you can't have a statue of a guy holding a statue, right? Isn't that like Inception, the movie Inception? Layers upon layers. Crossover is cool, but unless Michael Jordan's also included in it, then it doesn't mean much. The dunk is kind of like, how many dunks do you even remember AI having that were memorable, right? And the step over, this will get Russ to jump back on the show. I think the step over is one of the most overrated moments in Philadelphia sports. I do. Like, I just don't get it. In a vacuum, I remember watching that game one against the Lakers in the 2001 finals. They were underdogs. Nobody expected him to do anything. AI goes off. He hits the shot. Ty Lue falls down and he steps over him. Boom. Iconic moment. But then what happened after that? They went and lost the next 4 games. Yeah. It was a gentleman's sweep, right? And even though nobody expected the Sixers to win that series, to me, whenever I look at the step over, the only thing I can think of is them losing that series the way that they did. And they were competitive, but they were just outmatched. I mean, that was an underdog story for the longest time. So in a singular vacuum, you know, when you were watching that game 23 years ago now, I mean, that was massive. It was like, holy shit, what are we watching here? This is an iconic moment. And in singularity, yes, it's huge. But I don't want to be pulling up to the practice facility, walking in there to cover a practice or whatever. And, you know, I see a statue representing a moment that was a gentleman's sweep for the Lakers. I can't, maybe you're different. I can't disassociate the step over from the entirety of that series. So that's why I think it's overrated. I think it came back to, I don't know. I think like some of the hipster process fans like pulled the step over back and said, this is like the greatest moment in Sixers history or whatever. And it is an iconic moment. I'm not trying to shit on the moment itself. I just think because of the entirety of that series and what happened with the Lakers after that, it's just, it kind of puts a blemish on the whole thing. And Craig is digging up tweets from several years ago that I don't even remember sending out. I said, I'll be honest, I put the Jordan crossover above the step over. I think any from that series rings hollow since they had a gentleman's sweep. Counterpoint, I don't know what this is in response to, something from Brian Hickey. A lot of people who love the step over were not 10 years old back then. What did I respond to here, Craig? You're unable to view this post because the account. Okay. So I don't know what I was responding to, but let me read what I wrote there. Hang on. I think people forget that AI was cooking Kobe in the first half of this game. So they put Tyronn Lue on him and he was grabbing. Oh, yes. I remember this now, right? Because they had Kobe on AI, I think, to start. Then they brought Ty Lue off the bench, I want to say. And he was like grabbing and holding and being annoying. But Tyronn Lue, the funny thing about the step over too is that was actually pretty good defense by Tyronn Lue. I think he like tripped and fell. And then so AI stepped over him. But yeah, he actually had a decent game and played some decent defense. So yeah, that's my thoughts on that. I think the hand to ear is the most iconic, synonymous Allen Iverson thing that I can remember. So I hope that that's what they end up going with. Russ may or may not come back, but it doesn't matter because I'm going to end the show now because it's my show and I can do that. We went about an hour and 12 minutes, actually. Thank you to Craig for pushing the buttons. Thank you to Russ. Thank you to Corey. Thank you to Philly Captain. Thank you to Ford. Thank you to Rico. Thank you to everybody in the chat who participated today. Thank you for Connor telling me it's a nothing burger on the way out. Thanks to T from the 203. Hope you appreciated my monologue. And we will see you. Well, Russ will see you Monday for his show, and I'll be back on Thursday of next week.